All right, here we go.
Pac-12 fans, this one's for you.
Put your hands up, man.
This is the Pac-12 Apostles.
Keeping it real.
And only the truth lives here. Pac-12 Apostles. Apostles.
The Pac-12 season is mercifully over. It has come to an end, finally, with a big old donut in the bowl game column. Was Utah's loss really a win, though? And Utah's roster at the Rose Bowl, was that an issue? And grading every team's season, the big names have hit the transfer portal. Is this good or bad for college football? And so many coaching staff changes and non-changes have created a controversy in the conference. And should the conference go to 9 games, 8 games in conference? And also, Dan Lanning and the show caused All-Stars return to the Pac-12. Is this going to work? I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden with Mr. John Wilner. And this is the Pac-12 Apostles, the podcast by Pac-12 fans for Pac-12 fans, where you get the absolute truth. No sugarcoating anything. And you guys can always hit us up 818-293-7547 or shoot us an email. I'm mad@unafraidshow.com. All right, fellas. So bowl game is over. And I guess the Pac-12 had, they finished 0-5. I mean, did anybody think that that was possible?
I did not. I did not think they'd go winless. Then again, there wasn't much that you could actually predict as far as knowing who was going to be there, as far as people opting out, people hitting the transfer portal, people that go into COVID protocols. We didn't know, but winless wasn't really something that I ever considered.
Yeah, no, me neither. There were enough games that you thought could go either go either way that you figure the odds are they were going to win one of them, right? And even if you had known UCLA wasn't going to play, you know, Washington State, Central Michigan, Oregon State, Utah State, those are at best toss-ups, or Pac-12 should win those games. So I would not have guessed 0-5 ever.
Yeah, I would not have. The Oregon State game was truly surprising to me. So was the Washington State, Central Michigan, especially being that it wasn't that Washington State didn't have like, yes, it was a quick opponent, but you're more talented. And then there was the Rose Bowl, which you thought Utah could win or not, you know, like that was a toss up. But then you expected it to be plausible after Ohio State had so many players out. And then the Oregon game, to me, like that was the one that signaled to me. I was like, should these non-playoff bowl games, should they even count as far as records now because of the amount of transfers, the amount of opt-outs, and the coaching changes, which just decimate rosters? They kill bowl practice, your preparation, and then there was COVID too. Should those games even count as far as records anymore?
I mean, to who? Because they technically, to the schools make the decision about who is or is not going to be coaching there prior to the bowl game ever being played. The games, if a coach has already moved on, don't go on that coach's record. I think, you know, Keith Patterson, former ASU defensive coordinator, now the head coach at Abilene Christian, is 0-1 all time as head coach because he took over for Todd Graham at Pitt before Todd Graham went out to ASU. So that doesn't necessarily fall on the staff. I think that I think the only time I actually hear anybody bring up wins or losses when it comes to the actual bowl in context of your actual record is if they're talking about, you know, did they have a double digit win season or not? Otherwise, I don't think many people really put stock in what is essentially a showcase for advertisers in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, I would think coaches would want bowl results because some of them have bonuses in their contracts tied to winning a bowl game. So do the athletic directors. So.
Yeah. See, I understand why they want it, But I don't think that that's necessarily a good idea, right? It is, I mean, is it a good idea for them to, for records and all of that stuff to count when you have makeshift rosters, half your players are playing, people aren't, you know, like the coaches are recruiting for other teams while they're there coaching. It's a zoo. And I think that people used to base conference strength and all this stuff on bowl game records. But now you see, if it's not the playoffs, like it's like this just seems like an opportunity to get young guys some reps.
I kind of see what you're saying. The college football is unique in that it's really the only sport that counts playoff wins to your overall record. It's not a thing in the NBA. It's not a thing in the NFL. But it is a thing even in the FCS, which has a playoff. Like those things all, you know, North Dakota State racks up the wins every single year because of that. So I don't know. I don't necessarily see an issue with it because I don't know what it changes or hurts to have those things in there. I mean, is it embarrassing that you know the last couple of years first by rule and now by just needing somebody to come in and play that you can have somebody finish the season with 8 losses? That's a little embarrassing, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't, amongst all of our problems in college football, I don't think whether or not the bowl win actually affects your end of season record is all that big of a deal.
Well, okay. So then you guys tell me about the Utah game then. Was that the Rose Bowl where they lost to Ohio State 38-35, last second field goal, and they were in control of the game, and then the timeout situation. You guys give me your assessment of the game because I think a loss is a loss. This was their first time in the Rose Bowl. They didn't get the win. Yes, it was a great game. Ratings were amazing, but a loss is still a loss.
A loss is a loss, but Arizona State has been celebrating a Rose Bowl loss for 25 years. It's true. It's true. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with being proud of having a team that's special that reaches the Utah fans are going to remember this team forever. They just are. They, from the quarterback switch to Tavion Thomas getting more carries, to the tragedies that happened off the field, to what it took for them and who was counting them out for them to actually get to go to Pasadena, take on Ohio State and take a lead into the fourth quarter. You know, much like Arizona State, it doesn't matter that they won or lost. They're going to remember this for a really long time. But next time they get back there, you know, that's not going to be something that's as special to them. You know, they're going to want to win, but I think the novelty of it for Utah is something that's going to make it special regardless. I don't think Utah fans are looking at this as, you know, we lost. It wasn't even worth going. I don't think, you know, like Ohio State fans probably would have if they went down there shorthanded and got blown out by Utah, which is what it looked like was going to happen early on. I think that Ohio State fans would have looked at that and said that, you know, we want to forget this. It's not even worth it. But I think this is special to Utah fans regardless.
Oh, yeah. You know, and you just put it in context with the whole season. And it was a great game to end what turned out to be started off poorly on the field, tragically off the field, and ended up, you know, with a conference championship, an incredible game. I think that, you know, Utah fans look back on this season, you know, in a year and 5 years, it's going to be, you know, they're going to be smiling with the team's performance.
See, I think it's a good season. I mean, especially the way it started out, right? The way it started out. And then you have the young man die on the team too, second one in a calendar year. And you're just like, whoa. Like, I think that when you look at everything they went through, it's a total win. I'm just talking about just like there's something when like about finishing, you know what I mean? Like that finishing aspect of it that I think still leaves a little bit of, oh man, we almost turned that into a perfect season because I don't think that their season could have been any more perfect with their roster and situation than winning a Rose Bowl, because obviously the team wasn't good enough to win a national championship. So winning the Rose Bowl and beating Ohio State would have been the best possible scenario for the season, right?
Right. But, you know, they're playing a running back at corner. Cam Rising gets knocked out, which not a lot of people, I feel like not a lot of people are actually talking about. You know, everybody talked about Matt Corral and all that stuff, but like nobody really talked about Cam Rising getting KO'd in this game as one of the reasons why some of those very talented Ohio State players might not have taken the field that day. I think there was a lot of adversity even within this game. They'll be wondering what if for a really long time. They'll be wondering what if they had full strength in the secondary for Coach Shaw. They're going to be wondering, you know, what if our quarterback was able to finish the game. And then they're going to have Ohio State fans telling them forever, like, hey, you're lucky you were even in the game because we didn't have four or five of our best players.
They could have had every single player. They could have had Williams, and they could have had Olave as well. The score would not have changed, because I mean literally there was no other, like there was no other potential outcome. They scored damn near every single drive. So all that would have happened is, instead of Smith and Jigba having 600 yards and 28 catches, he would have had a third of that, because it would have been spread around. I mean, am I going too far with that, John?
No, I don't think so. I totally see what your point is. Right, there's a certain ceiling on how many you can score. 48 is pretty darn close, right?
Yeah.
And
how many more yards could he possibly pass for? Like none, because they all like almost went the maximum amount of yards. Like there are no more, like there's only so many yards that you can get before you score a touchdown.
Yeah, so. No, agreed. The thing that's I have gotten back to a couple times is Utah's defensive strategy on Ohio State's last drive, and either not using their timeouts or not letting them score.
I did not understand it either, because, and then you heard Whittingham after the game say, well, we couldn't get him but behind the sticks. Well, because your corners were playing like 8 yards off. Right. And they were just throwing hitches.
Right. So then you just got to let him score.
Yes. So now the question is, John, because there was a big debate about whether they should have gone to Disneyland or not and participated in some of the other activities as far as the Rose Bowl. And I thought that it was a bad idea for the game, but a good idea for the kids, because as a coach, your responsibility is to the kids. And yes, it's to win games, but with everything the team went through and everything, I thought that they deserved that opportunity to experience the Rose Bowl stuff. I'm talking about with COVID and all that. And is COVID part of the reason that their secondary was so thin?
Yeah, I don't know the specifics on some of those guys.
Okay. I didn't know if you had heard anything
about that. No, I hadn't heard anything about that. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't necessarily the case, but I hadn't heard that specifically.
Yeah, because that was absolutely tough. Having it, I mean, but you do have to applaud the kid running back out there, corner, all of that stuff. He tried his hardest, but you know.
Can I ask you what you think about one Whittingham quote, George? Kyle Whittingham said that CJ Stroud is the best quarterback he's coached against since Justin Herbert. Is he the best you saw this year?
Okay. So since Justin Herbert, right? And remind you, he used the words coached against. So Justin Herbert has been gone for 2 years. Last year, he only played against Pac-12 quarterbacks. So that's one. So that narrows the list down very short. So yes. Okay. So yes to 2020. In 2021, their non-conference was who? San Diego State, BYU, and Utah. Who else? Utah State?
Weber.
Okay. So no, not Weber. And so no, not San Diego State, and no, not BYU. And the Pac-12 quarterbacks, according to the stats, Anthony Brown actually was like the best quarterback in the Pac-12, stats-wise. So how he's a, I can make no argument against what he's, what he said.
The bar's not very high though, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Sure. Yeah, I mean, when you think about how he qualified it since Justin Herbert, okay, that's two seasons. One of them was a COVID year. I mean, I guess if you go back through the Justin Herbert, like his last two seasons, I mean, they didn't play.
I'm just trying to think. Last year, they didn't play Davis Mills last year. So, I mean, he, to me, he's probably been the best Pac-12 quarterback this year, last year. And they didn't face him. So,
yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. So I don't know, man. That sounds like a very low bar. And I don't mean that to diminish CJ Stroud, because from watching him from the Oregon game to the end of the season, he got a lot better. He got a lot better. I don't think he's as good as Bryce Young, but I do think that in 2 years from now, this kid's going to be freaking fantastic unless he has a Spencer Rattler season. But I don't foresee that particularly happening.
Well, you never know at Ohio State. They're not very patient. So if he has one bad game, they'll be calling for Kyle McCord or former USC commit Devin Brown. But I also wanted to throw out there, they opened the season against Florida and Billy Napier, and it's got to be pretty nice for them to be able to go into that game with six timeouts because they carry over, right?
Oh, jeez. That, oh, my God.
You are rude. That's funny. Hey, and then
savage.
That's super savage. But only if they carry over to the second half, because, you know, I mean, who needs six timeouts in the first half? all right. So now let's grade every single Pac-12 season. And we can start with the Pac-12 champs, the Utah Utes. I saw John put out an article about this, but in case you guys did not read it, go to the Mercury News, Google the Pac-12 hotline newsletter, and you guys can go read it, all of that. But okay, what would you give Utah this season?
I'd say a B plus. Maybe a B, but definitely want to give them credit for the season they had, for being Pac-12 champions. But you got a discount for making the wrong decision at quarterback, not following the lead of your team who elected Cam Rising captain, and not even having a guy that you elected as starter who could take the adversity of being benched and stick around. And so you really got to ding them for that decision. And then I'm even skeptical as to like how they didn't look at Tavion Thomas and say, this guy's 6'1", 220. Let's give him some early season carries, because that might have actually like relieved some of the issues that they were having at quarterback early in the year. So you really have to take those first 4 weeks, I think, into account when evaluating this Utah team. But from week five on, it's an A+.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. And it's weird because I got to give them a B+ as well for all the reasons that you said, but I don't want to discount the job that Kyle Whittingham did in that he made the wrong decision and then pivoted off of it. Like I think that you deserve credit for that, but then you still made the wrong decision, but then you got to the Rose Bowl. Had they won the Rose Bowl, I would have given them an A.
Yeah, I gave him an A+. I mean, I get what you guys are saying, and I thought about that quarterback situation, but I also feel like, you know what, they got through the death of a player, two players really, since last season, won their first conference title, beat the snot out of Oregon twice, played an all-time game in the Rose Bowl. I just kind of gave him an A+. I don't know.
You got a soft spot for Whittingham.
I got a soft spot for a team that went through what they went through. And also, I'm not sure that, you know, what's different. You could argue that if they start Rising, maybe they win both both games, San Diego State and BYU, but I'm not sure, especially the BYU game, that they would have won that. So, you know, was the season, is the trajectory of the season much different? I'm not sure you can say definitively it would have been. And the bottom line is that, you know, it was in a season that they'll remember forever.
All right. The next team, the Oregon Ducks. And this is funny because they finished 10-4, just like Ohio State finished 10-4. But to the naked eye and to, you know, it's weird because I've seen Washington fans in my mentions, other fans like, ha, 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 Oregon sucks. And I'm like, they finished 10-4, fool, and played for the Pac-12 championship. But I think that speaks to something, though, is that when they finished 10-4, that felt like a disappointment. Even though they beat Ohio State in the shoe, I think that it was the way that the two Utah losses happened that it felt like a loss. That the 10 wins did not feel as glamorous as it should feel, especially considering the Ohio State win as well.
That's fair. I give them a B. I had them going 8-4 on the season. I did not have them coming out of the Pac-12 North. So
I told you.
In one way, they actually exceeded my expectations, and I think they deserve credit for that. They had so many nagging injuries. They had a couple of catastrophic injuries, but so did everybody else. It was just the number of times you saw guys have to get helped off the field every single week.
Yes,
especially on the defensive side of the ball. I thought that Mario Cristobal did what he thought was best as far as having a power offense. You and I, George, we talked all year long about what the sacrifice that would mean is that they're going to probably lose some players to the portal, even if Cristobal stuck around by going that direction. And he kind of, you know, he stuck to his convictions and he did what he did. All in all, I think it was a solid season that met my expectations. I noticed it didn't meet a lot of other people's, and a couple of those losses were definitely ugly. I don't think the Stanford one ever should have happened. And I think we were probably, we were definitely easy on them at the time, looking back for that game, even though there were external factors that played into them losing that game. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, good season. I'm glad you finally came around on Travis Dye as a football player.
Yeah, see, I would give him a B as well. I give him a B to or a B plus because, like, considering how young this team was, and I cannot remember seeing an Oregon team as injured as this one was. It was insanity. And then also, like, kind of looking back on it, because, like, I still talk to Mario Cristobal, so I don't have anything bad against him, but I do think that his style of offense that he wants to play kind of hinders your ability to score a lot of points. That it's more that you end up in more rock fights unnecessarily because of the way he wants to play, instead of being able to, you know, put light up the scoreboard a little bit more. How about you, John?
I gave them, I think, a B minus. And, you know, part it's expectations partly, right? And, yep. And I didn't.
Very true.
I did pick them to win the North and to win the conference. And, you know, getting back to Utah, I didn't pick Utah to win the South. So they were a little better. And I thought, and part of the reason I gave Oregon the B minus two is, I mean, the two games that they had to win, they got steamrolled, right? I mean, that game, to me, the game in Salt
That's
Lake
kind.
City. Yeah, kind. The game in Salt Lake City, and I wrote about this at the time, that was a program-defining outcome that changes the trajectory of what you're doing. It's not just one loss. And the fact that they were not even competitive in that game, to me, caused me to give them a little bit extra downgrade.
Yeah, because that felt more, honestly, scheme related than anything else, right? Because you can't say it's a lack of players.
Oh, and punting, you know, the what happened at the end of the first half
yes.
was a disaster. So I just, that was bad. And then yeah. they no-showed in the conference championship game. So
yeah, yes, and you're just like, what the hell, bro? What the yeah, so that was okay, so we'll keep going through these quickly because we got a ton of stuff to cover. Oregon State. I gave them a C plus on the season. No, actually, no, I'll give them a B minus because I thought that they had so many opportunities. Like, nah, I'm going to give them a C plus because the Purdue loss, I can take. The Utah State loss, nope. And it was just the fact that they had so many opportunities to turn this not only into a special season, but, you know, to get to like 8 wins. That would have been so, so impressive. Like, so, so impressive to get to 8 wins after, like, considering what Jonathan Smith has brought this program from. And I thought that they were – that they should have been 2 games better. Like I just felt like it. They should have at least had 8 wins.
I give them a C+. And that's an A+ for – what they did in Corvallis and a D- for the rest because they were definitely 2 different teams, but Jonathan Smith has never been to a bowl. They haven't been to a bowl in a really long time. And they managed to retain him, which is really good for the future of Oregon State. And I thought that they were just freakishly untalented compared to the rest of the Pac-12. I thought he was maximizing a lot of what that roster had to offer. And this season includes a close game at Oregon, a win in LA over USC, and a win over the Pac-12 conference champion in Utah, in which they were dominant offensively. I'm not going to hold the bowl game against them. 7 wins is a really good season. And as long as they build on it, I think they're going to continue to look back on this season very favorably.
So, John, how about you?
I gave him a B just because I thought if you had told me ahead before the season they would win 7, that they'd be in the North race till the last week, they'd make a bowl game for the first time in 8 years, they'd beat the conference champs. I said, boy, that's a really good season for Oregon State because I didn't, you know, I didn't expect that's them fair. To do much.
No, that's a fair. We actually need to revisit our preseason predictions. All right, Arizona State, who finished 8-5, I gave them a D because this was their opportunity. This was their chance. Their non-conference schedule was just as light as it could possibly be with BYU, UNLV, and Southern Utah. And then they lost the BYU game, but they started out 5-1 and then lose to Utah, lose to Washington State. And it just felt like, and then they lost to Oregon State as well. And then they didn't have the development offensively that they wanted, all the offseason issues. Yeah, this is a D because they're fans. I mean, even Ralph, when we were predicting it prior to the season, he was like, bro, this team could go 12-0, 11-1. And I was like, I didn't see it. But I mean, I expected them to have the record that they have. But it was just a mess.
Yeah, I'm going to give them a C-. The thing that's keeping it at a C- is 8 wins, but only one of those wins is over a winning team. If you really get into the weeds on what happened this season, if you just look at Jaden Daniels alone, he had 7 games with no touchdown passes, 6 with a touchdown pass. He had more games without a touchdown pass than he had with one. This is the worst passing season offensively since 1992. As far as touchdowns thrown, yards per game, this is the worst kick scoring season since 1989. And this is the worst penalty margin season for Arizona State as far as how many penalties they have versus their opponent since they started keeping the stat in 2000. They were plus 3.6 on the season. They were undisciplined. They couldn't score the ball through the air. They could not score the ball using the kicking game, which the thing that held them above water the entire season was Antonio Pierce's defense. Ironically, that's the thing that's going to drown them long term, as far as the things that the staff was involved with that he had a hand in bringing in and hiring. If it wasn't for Antonio Pierce, they don't get 8 wins this season. The offense was absolutely putrid. I don't know who you blame that on, because Zach Hill has a long history of different quarterbacks having a lot of success under his tutelage, and they don't have any competition for Jaden Daniels. They're losing their 2 top running backs. One switched completely to defense, while the other declared for the NFL draft. And so 3 of their starting offensive linemen are gone after the season. It could be really bad. They could look back on this season and be like, man, those were the days. And that's incredibly depressing for Arizona State fans at this point. So I give them a C- because it was an 8-win season. They still won 8 games.
Where are you at, John?
I think I gave them a C. Basically, it was a soft 8 wins, but it was 8 wins, you know, average, pretty average.
Yep. All right. Washington State, 7-6, lost the bowl game to Central Michigan. That, and mind you, that loss hurt my ranking of them. Because I wanted to give them a good B because of losing their head coach, keeping their season together, winning, staying in the race. But yeah, it was just the blowout to USC. The loss to Utah obviously looks good. BYU, or like, I gotta give them a B-C+. Only, and it would be a B- if it weren't for the bowl game loss, because I do love the fact that they found their head coach and stayed together.
They only had a couple of days to prepare for their opponent, and they did figure it out.
It was Central Michigan.
But they figured it out, and they came back. And it's not like Central Michigan doesn't have a head coach that hasn't been around the block. Jim McElwain knows what he's doing. Central Michigan was left with some talent when he took that job. They're not terrible. I think it's two different seasons that you're looking at here. You can judge Washington State and grade Washington State based on the fact that they couldn't get some of their coaches on board as far as the vaccine mandate that ultimately ended up costing them their job. Or you can look at the fact that they were able to regroup and make a bowl and be respectable and put together a pretty good coaching staff in the wake of everything that happened there. So I like this season for them. I give them a B-. I think they're fired up and raring to make a big impact going forward. It's 7-6 is not representative of what this team was able to accomplish as a group.
All right. How about you, John?
Give him an A-.
Ooh.
Yeah. You know, you tell me Washington State's going to go 6-3 in league play and have to fire its coach in the middle of the season, I'd say that's a really good season for the Cougars. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I was the Russian judge. I was a little too harsh. All right. Now to the team. Oh, UCLA. UCLA ended up with Chip Kelly's best season since he's been there. How would you guys grade their season?
I gave this one a B-. I thought it was a really good. Year. I thought there were a couple of games that would have made a big difference. Being the only team with a winning record to have a loss against Arizona State does not look good for them. When it's all said and done, they were clicking in all phases outside of defensively, just offensively anyway. Toward the end of the season, ending with 3 wins. Was really big. They were competitive against Oregon, even though they didn't win that game. The loss to Fresno State is also not something that I'm sweating. That was a really special team as well. So I think that it was a good year, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Anything that I'm taking off for UCLA is all because of the fact that defense didn't communicate with each other. The scheme was weird. They don't have any accountability there. But B minus overall for me.
Yeah, I got the same grade. They, you know, they haven't been to a bowl game, even though they didn't get a chance to play this year, in forever. And, you know, Chip Kelly clearly has things offensively going in the right direction. But now it's a matter of what they're going to do for next season with his contract and all of that stuff. But I gave him a B minus two.
I gave them a C. I mean, basically the same thing. It was a soft 8 wins, right? No, you don't beat a team with a winning record.
Oh, they beat LSU. They were.
I don't think LSU finished with a winning record, did they? They were 6-6.
Well, it depends on if you consider 6-6 a winning record. I don't.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Yeah, yeah, no.
But the SEC means more, George.
Listen, no, it does not. All right, USC, I gave them an F, an absolute F, but, like, I think that they deserve a two-part grade, that they get an F for the entire season, but then they get a, but then it's like, Dumb and Dumber. Just when I didn't think that you could do anything worse, you come back and totally redeem yourself with the Lincoln Riley hire. So I give them an F for the football part and then an A for getting a coach.
This is definitely an F. If you were to give them anything more than that, I think you get inundated with hate from their own fans. I mean, they're completely embarrassed by how the season went. They're embarrassed that they retained Clay Helton, even though it looks like it worked out for them in the long run. They're embarrassed by the kid who got the Dorian Thompson Robinson autograph. They're embarrassed giving up their first home loss to Utah, the first in 70 years home loss
to Oregon State.
About the only thing that they have any solace in was that Jackson Dart showed some promise. But yeah, just overall, just what an awful, awful year for the Trojans.
Easy F.
That was the easiest F. Easy F. All right. We got Washington. I gave them an F too. I mean, all the obvious reasons. You have to fire a coach after 2 years. Your recruiting classes stink right now. Yeah, easy F.
I also failed Washington because to pass Washington would be the ultimate irony because they cannot pass anything ever.
How about you, John?
Yeah, F. You know, I think that's a big issue for the Pac-12. Washington and USC both get Fs. I mean, there's no way the conference is going to thrive when two of its top three programs are getting Fs, right? That's cool. A bigger picture issue.
Yes. No, you are 100% right about that. They can't be getting Fs. They can be getting Bs. They can, even a C maybe, but they can't get an F.
Nope. Bad news for the conference if that's happening.
Yeah, but and we have already given our assessment on Kalen DeBoer. So Washington fans, don't think that we didn't talk about you're a coach and think that this is a long term good a hire. Stanford, I gave Stanford an F too. This team is moving in the wrong direction offensively, defensively. It was brutal to watch them at the end of the season. I was like, this doesn't even look like I felt like if you put them against North Dakota State, I would pick North Dakota State every time at the end of the season.
I'm upset that Stanford wasted my time. They definitely get an F as well for their season. But I was ready to give them that F in the third quarter of the game against Kansas State. It looked so incredibly obvious that they made the wrong decision at quarterback, that the entire roster was talent depleted, that they weren't being coached up. Like, it was painfully obvious. Then they beat USC the next week, and then we had to spend the next 4 weeks wondering, was this team actually any good or not? And that was incredibly frustrating. They finished the season, losing 7 games in a row. They did not score more than 14 points for the last 5 weeks of the season. Brutal offensive and defensive performance. They should not be considered for anything other than an absolute failing grade.
Well,
the first F the Cardinals have ever seen, anyone on that team has ever seen.
I actually gave him a D+. So sorry to disappoint everybody, but partly because I didn't think they were going to be any good, but also, I mean, the schedule, right? You have to take into account that they played all Power 5 opponents.
Do get respect for that.
They played Kansas State at 9 a.m. in Dallas, right? If Kansas State is UNLV and, you know, then they got another win, right?
Maybe.
Well, you would think.
Well, UNLV's terrible. So terrible. Yes, you are.
I'm right. Just saying you kind of got to take into account that their schedule was more difficult, and they got they got Utah, and Arizona State in the cross division. They didn't, and I didn't think they were going to be any good. So I gave them a D+. And I also didn't think that they should be viewed the same way as USC or Washington.
Yeah, true. Now you are 100% right, because there was more expectations for both of those teams. Damn. So instead of putting them on the same plane, I will amend my USC and Washington grades from Fs to a Us. Like they are so bad that they're ungradable. So I can still give Stanford an
ungradable. the same way Arizona State is uncoached.
Ooh, yeah, and we will get into that, boy, because that's a whole nother can of worms. All right, we got, four teams left? We got Cal. Cal finished the season 5-7. Listen, they had all type of COVID issues, all of this stuff. I would give them I don't even feel like that they should get a full letter grade, that they should get like a pass or no pass. Like they get a pass, like pass, because what was there to actually expect considering everything that they did? Like the offense wasn't that great. So I feel like if I have to give them a grade, I'm going to give them a C.
This year turned out exactly the way that I thought it would. The moment that Brett Johnson got hit by that car and they said he was out for the season, I was like, that absolutely takes the air out of the room. And then you have one of their best linemen medically retire. They were already thin up front. I thought they'd go 5-7. They did. I still managed to be disappointed every time I watched them because they weren't running the ball as much as I felt like they had the ability to do. But that being said, they met my expectations. I think a C is appropriate.
Yeah, I gave them C or C minus. I kind of held it against them that even though they didn't have Chase Garbers for the Arizona game, and if they win that game, they go to a bowl.
I forgot about that game. They definitely should have beat Arizona.
They should.
No quarterback.
But the thing is, they should be held accountable for not having a functional backup quarterback, right? If their quarterback in that game can complete 5 passes, right? I mean, they win that game, and then they're going to a bowl. And I think that's kind of on them.
Damn, that's a good observation, sir. All right, now let's go to Arizona. Arizona, who finished 1-11. I thought that it's funny because their season was absolutely awful at 1-11. But when you look at the momentum that they got in recruiting, the how hard the players played, like they were so talent deficient. Everything at the end of the season, when I look at Arizona right now, I'm like, I would give them a B. I would give them a B because I'm a progress, not perfection. And the expectations were so incredibly low that they actually exceeded those expectations, I think.
As a former school teacher, I would also give them a B, a bumblebee sticker. With a good job on it, right next to the big F written in crayon, because you can't. They went 1-11, George. They went 1-11, and they're only they were very, very close to being 0-12. And I don't. Yes, the future looks promising. Yes, they continue to exceed expectations off the field, but the games played on the field and on the field, they were the worst team in the Pac-12.
God,
and that, did that meet my expectation for them? Yes, but my goodness, dude, I can't yeah. give them what? How could I?
He said I give them a bumblebee sticker next to their F. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah,
where are you at, John?
I gave him a D. You know, didn't fail. It was, you know, but they did. They lost at home to NAU. They shouldn't be losing to NAU.
Oh, true. Yeah,
I don't care.
Yeah, true. I amend mine now to a C. I forgot. I mean,
they would have a. They would have a losing. Their losing streak would be at like 20 something games right now if Cal hadn't had a COVID problem. So, I also didn't think they should get an F either. So, game of D.
Yeah. All right. Now on to the transfer portal, because the transfer portal has been absolutely demolishing rosters right now. Oregon's got a few guys out, Robbie Ashford, DJ James, USC has guys in the portal. Stanford's actually getting a kid from Utah out of the portal, right? So from Oklahoma, which I thought was weird. Stanford taking a guy out of the portal. But how do you guys see this impacting the Pac-12? Do you think the Pac-12 is actually ends up in a better spot with the portal or worse?
I personally feel like if the coaches are on top of things, which they weren't necessarily early on, and part of that has to do with a lot of transition, if the coaches are on top of things, they can benefit because so many people leave the West Coast to go play in other conferences. They find out that they're not all about that culture, or maybe they don't fit in, or maybe they get homesick, and they come back. They come back to the West Coast. And so I think the Pac-12 can be a big-time beneficiary from the portal. I've always been a of the mindset that it actually benefits the Pac-12 more than it hurts, so long as you're at least recruiting good enough talent for those people to come and play alongside when they get back. And the Pac-12 has not been doing that. The question that I have that everybody wants to hear your comment on, George, is one of the results of the portal is Bo Nix is going to Oregon. And you have been hating on Bo Nix for 3 years. And now he's your quarterback. So
he's not necessarily my quarterback yet, buddy. He's got to win the job. He's got to win the job.
I'm just excited for the mental gymnastics ahead. It's not even an Olympic year.
Yes, it is an Olympic year. The Winter Olympics start in like 3 weeks, buddy.
Winter gymnastics for George to come around on Bo Nix as the Oregon quarterback.
Yeah. So, man, look, if he's good, I will jump on the bandwagon. If he's not, then you know he will get Anthony Brown treatment. So USC is going to have a bunch of guys in the that now they're in a situation to where with Caleb Williams, quarterback from Utah, hopping in the portal. They have Jackson Dart. Their fans are like, yes, Jackson Dart's the guy. But in their heart, they really are like, ooh, I don't know for sure. He's got some promise, but I'm not 100% sure, right? So, and then I saw a poll tweeted out. They said, oh, should USC fans want Caleb Williams or Jackson Dart? I was like, how is this even a question? Like Jackson Dart had some good moments, but he also had some awful moments. So, but he's a true freshman. But what would I take Caleb Williams or him? It's not even close. Give me Caleb Williams. I've seen what the guy can do.
I agree with you. I think that he showed that he's very dynamic. He already knows Lincoln Riley's offense, and I think that he would provide them a lot of excitement and a huge boost right out of the gate. What is going on at UCLA? Is my question. How did they get and then lose a quarterback to Oklahoma? What is DTR's plans?
That's a good question.
Are we looking at the Ethan Garber show? You know, what is going on there?
Have you heard anything, John?
No, not yet. But he's got 10 days basically to decide.
Yeah, almost 2 weeks ago.
You know, I think that what we're talking about right now and the whole thing about the transfer portal, that's to me, that's a big issue is what is going to be the state of Pac-12 quarterbacking on the other side of this offseason turnover, right? Especially with the transfer portal. you know, because it's rare that a kid's going to come in out of high school. But what is the portal going to do for Pac-12 quarterbacks? You know, what is that lineup of 12 starters going to look like next September 1st or whatever it is, right? Because it was bad this season. Nobody will convince me otherwise. It was substandard, and it's got to get better. Part of the reason it was substandard, I think, is coaches made some bad decisions early on. That can't happen again. But they got to make the right decisions with the transfers, and they got to manage their QB rooms. It's very difficult to manage your QB room right now. You can't get caught with nothing. So we'll see how that looks. But to me, that's the biggest personnel issue of the
in the entire conference.
6 months, next biggest personnel issue, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you have Arizona, who's got a quarterback problem. Arizona State has a quarterback problem, to be perfectly
honest. And also turned down Spencer Rattler, by the way.
Yeah. UCLA, if DTR doesn't come back, has a quarterback problem. USC could. I mean, we don't know what their status is. I mean, because Dart is a question mark as well, so they have questions. Cal, who in God's name, who knows there? Washington, I mean, assuming that you have, if Michael Penix Jr. starts, then you're fine. Washington State seems to be, I mean, what do you guys think of their status with Jaden Delora? Because he had a grades issue last year. He almost wasn't eligible. He almost got kicked out of school.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if he's eligible, Washington State, Stanford, and Utah and Colorado, Utah and Oregon State are probably in pretty good shape. But there's eight schools you could make a case where there's some questions.
Yeah,
and that's infuriating because a couple of those schools that have questions, quote unquote, we were talking about being in really good shape going into this last year, and there isn't really a change at the quarterback position. You know, the fact that Oregon State hasn't taken a transfer and that they're not, you know, blowing up Chuba Purdy's phone right now, who's still one of the only serviceable guys out there, or J.D. Johnson, who's coming out of medical retirement, who is at Michigan. The fact that Oregon State doesn't have somebody brought in already is wild. The fact that we talked for 2 years about, you know, Jaden Daniels, is he the future of the conference? Not only is he not going to the NFL early, he is returning to Arizona State with half of the fan base completely moved on from even wanting to see him take the field. And so it's infuriating. And what's nice about the transfer portal is there's some ways that the Pac-12 is being helped. The Mountain West seems to be a farm system right now for the Pac-12. You have Hawaii's best linebacker is committed to UCLA. You might see a few other Wyoming's best receiver is out on the market. I know UTEP's not in the Mountain West, but they just sent a quote unquote a wide receiver to University of Arizona, who's going to be a really, really big time get for them, and Jacob Cowing, who had like 1400 yards receiving last year. There are good things happening in the Pac-12. I just haven't seen the improvement at the quarterback position that we need to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's putrid right now. Overall, because I mean, just the fact that we can only think of Utah with Cameron Rising, and who else has a stable quarterback situation?
Stanford does with McKee if he's healthy.
Oh yeah, yeah,
he's good.
Yeah, okay.
If he's healthy, yeah. he's not yeah. very mobile, but he can throw the ball.
Yeah, so you have two stable situations in the Pac-12.
You're making the assumption that Jaden Delora's off the field stuff could come back to bite him again. Otherwise, he is going to return.
Okay,
yeah, he's
the
best good.
Quarterbacks in the conference.
Okay, so I'll give you three. Three out of 12 stable situations.
I don't know. I think Oregon State would argue they're pretty stable. I mean, Nolan's was pretty good. Their offense wasn't their problem, right? So. I think he works for their system.
Was, but yeah,
he works for their system. They could certainly do better, but relative to the other eight, I think they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, which isn't saying much, which is what we've been saying. all right. The staff changes or non-changes. So we've already seen what's happened at Washington. New head coach at new head coach at USC and Lincoln Riley. But I think the biggest staff changes, like of not total new staffs that have come in this year, has been at Arizona. Arizona, I think, has upgraded their staff. Things seem to be going right for Jed Fish. While on the other hand, in the South, well, actually, first and quickly, what do you guys think about what Jed Fish has done with his staff?
I don't know that losing Don Brown is an upgrade for them. I think that defensively is where they need the most stability. And I'm a little bit worried that they're not going to get that with, you know, bringing in a UCLA position coach who had been at USC to run the defense, but maybe they do. Other than that, I mean, it's kind of, I don't know. It feels very much like what they've been doing.
They're going to have a big uptick in talent though.
They hit the portal. This is 2 years in a row where what they've done in the portal has genuinely wowed me.
Yeah.
But that's what the portal's all about, right? If you've got playing time to offer, you can reload pretty quick.
Yep. Now here are some teams that did some things in the offseason that I am truly concerned about. The Colorado Buffaloes, they had their offense was, you guys know where they were ranked in the nation? Because they were obviously the worst, like first or second worst in the Pac-12.
Somewhere in the hundreds.
They were 121st in points per game out of 130.
Okay. So, and then he goes and hires Mike Sanford to be his new offensive coordinator. And that's what Carl Durrell did. He hired the guy who got fired at Minnesota, who his coach said ruined their offense and ruined their team on some level as well, and who's been fired from his last couple of jobs, and that's who he went to go hire. He interviewed Brendan Marion and other people and could have gotten him, and that's who he hired. Carl Durrell is on his way to getting fired.
It was a huge bummer to see the announcement, Colorado fans melt down, and then Brendan Rice enter the portal. That was, if you're a Colorado fan, that just had to take all of the fun out of
Minnesota. Didn't throw the ball. Colorado couldn't throw the ball. Like, what? I don't understand. Like, what? Like, if I was Carl Durrell, I'd be like, listen, I gotta fix this. I will go with young, innovative, anybody who can score points, a lot of them. These are the people who are at the top of my list. And this is no diss against Mike Sanford as a person, but the results are the results.
And maybe JT Schrout is able to come in there and make Sanford look good. Maybe, but it'll be with Montana Lamonius Craig as your number one wide receiver instead of Brendan Rice. So I just, that really bummed me out. Not to mention everything else that's going on, you know, or surrounding the Boulder program right now with, you know, their coaches losing homes and them getting rid of some of their staff that was more beloved, like their linebackers coach last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's one of their better positions every year.
Yeah. Who I think is one of the people who had his house burned down, by the way. So rough week for him. But yeah, it is taken. It feels like all the hope of 2022 is already kind of fading away, because the fan base is so upset about this hire, and then they lose one of their most promising players in the process.
What do you think about the hire, John?
Yeah, I'm kind of wait and see. I don't know that Minnesota was. I think that some of the issues there might have been difference in philosophy between PJ Fleck and Mike Sanford. And I'm kind of waiting to see as to whether it works at Colorado. I don't necessarily think it won't work. I think that, you know, if they run Sanford's offense, I think that'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Oh, see, you are very nice.
I just don't know. I don't know. Yeah. But I do know that they were running PJ Fleck's offense at Minnesota.
Okay. Okay. Okay, so that is noted.
It's possible, yeah. It's possible it was a scapegoat situation, but you did have a lot of Colorado fans that were really excited at the possibility of Brennan Marion. People like us and people like Andrew Hobner had hyped up that possibility of him coming back to the Pac-12 all year long. So there's just some disappointment there. And you look at Minnesota's offense, and they Arizona State had the worst passing offense, you know, that they've had in 30 years. And you look at Minnesota's offense, they also threw 12 touchdown passes this year. So it's one of those things where we need the passing game for Colorado to be functional for them to be competitive.
All right. Now, what do you guys think about Stanford and Cal? They're not making any moves so far, particularly Cal on the offensive end and Stanford on the offensive and the defensive end in terms of coordinators.
I don't know if there were any, well, Stanford's never going to do anything ever, it feels like. But as far as Cal goes, you know, they lost Charlie Regal, one of their best recruiters. He's now the head coach of Idaho State. And I'm not sure what those two schools seem to be so trust oriented. And they've had some Cal's had some transition at the coordinator position to try to get that fit and that chemistry right. And they've lost some good position coaches along the way, but it feels like there are just things that are more important priorities to those two head coaches than having somebody who is the most energetic recruiter or the most innovative mind. It seems like they want it to be familiar and familial.
John?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot to be said at both schools that they value continuity maybe more highly than other schools, because you got to deal with the academic component, which is different at the two places. And they both have a lot more trouble with the transfer portal because of that. So David Shaw's belief has always been that changing assistant coaches is just an excuse. So I don't expect him to do that. Cal, you know, I think they may think that they've got the right scheme and that Musgrave did okay. They just don't have the players, right? I mean, if you look, I look at yards per play kind of as the best measure, because it takes into account differences in tempo. And Cal was, you know, they were fine in yards per play this year. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, I'm not positive. I look at other schools and think that there was a much greater need to change coordinators than I do with Cal. So we'll see how it plays out with whoever's going to be their quarterback, whether it's Jack Plummer or, you know, one of the guys that got on the roster now.
I could see how Cal would look at, like, at a baseball metaphor, like a guy that's hitting the ball hard, but he's just hitting it to the outfielders, right? Like they were doing a lot of the right things offensively. It just wasn't resulting in points. And so if they can clean a few things up, it's possible that you see a huge leap from them next year.
Yeah. They were sixth in the conference in yards per play. So
who were the top teams in yards per play?
Yards per play. Number one was Oregon State, but they were only 20th nationally. Yeah. Then Utah, then we got Arizona State, Oregon, Arizona State, UCLA, and then USC and Cal were basically tied. Okay. Not terrible.
Yeah. All right. Final thing that we have up is in the coaching is Oregon. Oregon has people have they've used the term the show cause all stars. Because they have Josh Lapoy coming over. They have a bunch of guys who, and granted, you always have to take this with a super grain of salt, because, and especially I know this as an Oregon fan too, because they're like, oh, Oregon cheats. They're this, they're that. They're, you know, all of the nasty rumors that people put out. And they have called them the show cause all stars, but you don't have to worry about that anymore because of NIL and all of this stuff. So, do you like what Dan Lanning? Well, I didn't even ask you. Do you like the Dan Lanning hire, and what do you think is going to be made of his staff that he's putting together so far, including Junior Adams from Washington?
That one made me sit up in my seat a little bit.
That made me happy.
Did it? Well, yeah. He was always one of the guys you liked over there, right?
Yeah.
I was telling you on this show over and over and over again that I thought Dan Lanning would be a great candidate for them, and then it happened. I hope that it works out. He is somebody with a super inspirational story. His path to get where he got is pretty awesome. He's very young, so I think, and he doesn't really have like a school that he's tied to in a way that Mario Cristobal did, so that checks that box for Oregon fans. And some of the guys he brought on are guys I've known for a really long time. I cover high school football in Arizona. I've known Kenny Dillingham since he was Charlie Regal's offensive coordinator at Chaparral High School. Like, I've, you know, this is so it's interesting to see some of the guys that they're bringing in. A lot of youth, a lot of energy, a lot of like a lot of the assistants they're bringing in are some very outwardly evangelical religious folk as well. So it's always interesting to see how that sort of thing factors into Pac-12 culture, because there are some parents who feel more comfortable sending their kids to play elsewhere because they think that the Pac-12 is just like one giant godless liberal bastion of hedonism. Which is like a really weird thing that it factors into parents' decision making, but it does. And so, you know, he's got some really good recruiters. He's got some people that can appeal to different sensibilities and culture. And there's a lot of youth and energy. It could end up being a really good thing, or you could end up with kind of more of the same as far as a lot of talent and maybe not necessarily the coaching chops to produce in the way that you want it to.
How about you, John?
Yeah, kind of wait and see. Just, you know, you just two years as a Power Five coordinator, and he's coaching a defense with 11 NFL draft picks, right? I mean, he's got better personnel than everybody he's going against other than Alabama. So I think it could end up working out. We'll see.
Or you think that they will be able to recruit equal, less, or better than Mario Cristobal?
My guess is that he's going to have the same approach to recruiting that Cristobal did. That would be my guess. So he will do, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they are super successful. I'm not sure that the NIL thing is necessarily the, you know, the offset answer to the what are they called? The show cause all-stars, right? We haven't seen exactly how NIL is going to impact recruiting of high school kids, you know, at the real foundational level yet. I think that's probably another year or two away.
We'll
see. I mean, it's interesting.
Because I've said that because there's a lot of people that throw that around. They're like, oh, kids are going to the highest bidder and all of this stuff. And I'm like, maybe a little bit, but I think that the market corrects itself pretty quickly in terms of if there is some of that, then you're going to have like kids not pan out or not work out. And then people who actually put the dollars into the pockets are going to say, well, here's a better way for us to use our resources for our products and our businesses to get the name out or however they want to structure deals. So I think that whatever the money aspect of it is going to get, that there's going to be some sort of correction and it'll take 2-3 years for NIL to really settle down and really kind of find that sweet spot on where it's going to live, because there's no putting the toothpaste back in the tube.
Kids were always going to the highest bidder, though.
No, that's very true, too.
I'm not talking about Bagman or anything like that. I'm talking about the fact that the top level kids were being told in their living rooms and on the phone and on their visits that I, Coach X, am going to do the best job preparing you for a life of riches down the road. And you would commit to me because I was the best investment plan for your future, including financially. Now there's just a signing bonus. Now there's money up front. But I just think that, you know, kids are going to the highest bidder and they weren't before. What do you think they're being told? But I will get you to the NFL means I will make sure your kids go to college. I will make sure your grandkids want for nothing. That is what these coaches are telling these kids when they're saying, I will get you to the NFL. It's not, I will get to playing because I know you're a huge Buffalo Bills fan. I'm going to get you in a Bills jersey someday. That's not what it means. It means I will get you to the league and set you up financially for success for the rest of your life.
That's fair. I think that's fair. But yeah, so the Pac-12 has a lot to do. And final thing, John, did either one of you guys get a chance to read the article? I think it was in the LA Times where George Kliakoff, his comments about the season.
I saw that. I talked to him too. And he was pretty candid about it being a disappointing season. So, I mean, at least he's admitting you can't solve a problem until you admit you've got one, right? And he is clearly admitting that there's a problem.
Yeah, and that's the thing that – oh, okay, so you dealt with Larry Scott a lot, and you clearly – you know, and I don't want you to necessarily say anything bad about Larry. I mean, I've said plenty of bad things about him and how he has – and how just – how the contracts were structured for the – TV rights and all this, like they're airtight. Like, and when I got a chance to talk to George Kliakoff, he was very adamant, like, yo, these contracts were awfully written. Like that they were so airtight that they gave the conference zero flexibility. Like everything was on the TV people side. And now he feels like a breath of fresh air as it relates to Larry Scott, because it feels like he's more honest and real, give you a real assessment of the situation instead of what we saw from Larry Scott.
No, I think that's fair. I had no issues with Larry Scott personally. I disagreed with some of his policies.
Yeah. Personally is different right. than work.
And certainly the TV contract situation is not good. I mean, just look at the Big Ten. The Big Ten's current deal was signed after the Pac-12's current deal, and it pays more, and it ends before the Pac-12's deal ends. So they got into the market later, got more money, and they're getting out to renegotiate earlier.
So do you think that there's any chance that there's new TV contracts before 2024? Because I know that George said he was trying to figure out any type of way to get that done.
Very little chance.
Because if you're the networks, you're like, we got you for cheap. We got you by the short and curlies. We don't care what happens to you as a conference. We'll figure it out.
Well, and the other thing, you know, it's not the Pac-12 with its media rights is not existing in a vacuum, right? Because the networks, whether it's Fox or ESPN, Turner, CBS, you know, NBC, Comcast, Amazon, right? They're dealing with how many billions were just shelled out for the NFL. They got to deal with the SEC is getting all this money from Disney. Big Ten's media rights are coming up. UFC is coming up, right? I mean, there's a lot of money out there, but it's got to be – the networks are managing it based on their priorities for a whole bunch of different sports leagues, not just the Pac-12 in a vacuum.
How important – no, going Ralph.
I don't understand if the Pac-12 owns the Pac-12 network and they own the rights to broadcast the games and they understand the distribution of the Pac-12 network is terrible.
Why can't they undo their own contracts?
No, not even that. Why don't they have the ability to distribute some of that content for free? It will not hurt them.
No. They can't. I asked George Kliakoff this. They cannot. He said, I would have done this. He said they cannot because ESPN and Fox have the rights to the games. So the Pac-12 can't even control which teams end up on ESPN or Fox. They have no control over it. The TV networks have all the control.
But if there's a Pac-12, if there's a game that's going to be on Pac-12 Network because it's on a Thursday night, they can't simulcast that on Facebook or Twitter. That is bonkers. How did they end up in this terrible
spot? Because Comcast won't let them. Comcast is the main distributor of the Pac-12 Network stuff, right? Anything that's on the Pac-12 Network, Comcast has an airtight contract. Dish, Cox, all the four original distribution partners with the Pac-12 Networks all wrote into the contracts. The Pac-12 cannot stream Pac-12 network content, because then all of a sudden Comcast didn't get, you know, the women's basketball game between Stanford and Oregon State that's on the Pac-12 network, if that gets streamed, Comcast isn't making money off that.
It's just insane to me that there can't be some type of negotiation that's like, hey, we'll stream this, but literally the only commercial that will run four straight times every single time is a commercial for Comcast.
Because that
there can't be some wiggle room.
Well, there would be
where we will promote Comcast with our
Comcast would say, sure, but we want some money back. We're not going to pay you the distribution dollars if that content is also getting made available for free by streaming. We're not going to pay you the same distribution dollars. So then all of a sudden the Pac-12 network's revenue model craters and they're even in worse situation.
Bro.
Yeah. I get mad when I think about, I just always think back to when like COVID first started and Larry Scott gave an interview from his living room. And he talked about how he had to share the space with his kids who were playing video games in there. And in my head, I was like, the guy can't even negotiate his own office space with his own children.
The big problem, the streaming issue is one problem. The bigger problem is that it's a 12-year deal that didn't have a so-called look-in, meaning a window after, say, 8 years where they could make some tweaks or renegotiate. It was locked in. Scott thought at the time that was great because it would bring stability. It would give them more stability than other leagues. But in fact, it has caused them to have to – they're basically paralyzed.
Well, it didn't give any credence to the future. You know what I mean? And that things change in this era very quickly. Like the fact that there are so many cord cutters, I don't even have cable, dude. And there's nothing I miss. I watch every single thing that I want to watch. Nothing that I miss. And there's a lot of people that are like me. So the idea though, that these new contracts, I said, George Kliakoff is going to have to be a freaking magician. That we are going to find out how good this dude is pretty quickly, because CBS, I think the Pac-12 has to get CBS firstly, CBS may be trying to bid for the Big 12. I'm sorry, for the Big 10.
Oh, that's already happening. And that's part of the Pac-12's problem, is they're going to be late on the CBS. So.
Correct. So the CBS thing is an issue. And then if you don't get CBS, where do you go that you can get in homes every single day? Because the problem is they're only in 17 million homes right now with the Pac-12 network, and the Pac-12 suffers from an availability problem, which then impacts recruiting and all of this stuff, which impacts your on-field product. I don't know. If you don't get CBS, I don't know what the other options are. And granted, the TV landscape could change dramatically in the next 2 years, but it's scary, John. Scary.
But to paraphrase Larry Scott, that we don't know what we don't know yet. So maybe something will get invented. Maybe Pac-12 games streamed directly into the chip that was part of your vaccine as part of a negotiation with Bill Gates.
Yeah. Who knows?
But like I look at it this way. It's really nice that George Kliavkov is being forthright and saying the things that people are thinking. It's like going to you have stomach pain. You go to a doctor. He tells you it's all in your head. It's all in your head. It's all in your head. Go to a second doctor and he tells you, no, you actually have a stomach issue. That's great. But that second doctor is only a good doctor to you if he can treat it. So we're in wait and see mode with what he'll be able to do as well. It is refreshing to have honesty, but the problem's still the problem.
Last, and we can end here, John. And when the new TV network deal comes up, will there still be the same 12 teams in the Pac-12?
Yes.
Okay. You are heard it here. He wrote it in stone. No, I'm joking.
I completely believe that will be the case.
I do as well. How about you, Ralph?
You mean even if Wyoming goes undefeated next year, wins a national championship? I'm convinced every year that's going to happen. So if Wyoming wins a natty, you think Pac-12 would take them?
we have to kick you off the podcast because you clearly have been hanging out with Antonio Brown. whatever you're smoking, don't pass it, buddy. Don't pass it. You guys, I'm George Reiser. He's Ralph Amsden. He's John Wilner. This is the Pac-12 Apostles. You guys, peace out. Catch you guys next episode.